Ukraine takes another step towards joining the European Union. The bloc's leaders say Kyiv should be granted candidate status along with Moldova, but membership talks could take years. So what happens now? This is Inside Story. Hello there and welcome to the programme. I'm Nick Clark. Ukrainians are ready to die for the European perspective. That's according to leaders of the European Union. The executive arm of the 27-member bloc is recommending candidate status for Ukraine along with Moldova. Russia's invasion has made the issue ever more urgent, but all members of the EU will have to approve the candidacy at a summit in Brussels next week. The leaders of France, Germany and Italy say they will back Ukraine's bid. Once approved, Kyiv will begin membership talks, which could take years to finalise. The European Commission president says that Kyiv's candidacy is conditional on implementing reforms, including tackling corruption.
In the view of the Commission, Ukraine has clearly demonstrated the country's aspiration and the country's determination to live up to European values and standards. Ukraine, before the war, had already embarked on its way towards the European Union. For 8 years now, it had already been gradually moving closer to our union.
Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, called it a historic achievement.
Now we are only one step away from fully-fledged integration into the EU. We have a positive assessment from the European Commission concerning candidate status for Ukraine. And it is a historic achievement for all who work for our country. We just have to wait for the decision of the European Council next week. I think Ukraine made everything possible for this decision to be positive.
So what about Russia's president? Well, he says it's Ukraine's choice if it wants to join the EU, but warns Kyiv risks becoming what he called a semi-colony.
The EU is not a military alliance, unlike NATO. That's why we've always said our position here is consistent and clear. We have nothing against it. It's a sovereign decision of any country to join an economic alliance or not. And it's up to this economic union to accept new member states or not.
All right, let's take a closer look at the process to join the European Union. Countries first have to submit a membership application to the EU Council. It then assesses their ability to meet the so-called Copenhagen criteria. And this includes a functioning market economy, a stable democracy and the rule of law, as well as the acceptance of all EU legislation and the euro. If the Commission's opinion is positive, the Council then begins to negotiate membership, often on a subject-by-subject basis, which can take years. Five nations currently have EU candidacy status: Albania, North Macedonia, Montenegro, Serbia, and Turkey, which has been on the list for more than 20 years. All right, let's bring in our guests. In Kyiv, we have Alexander Scheber, who's a former Ukrainian ambassador to Austria. In Bratislava, Elena Kutsko, director at the Globsec Policy Institute. And in Brussels, Pieter Kleppe, an editor at brusselsreport.eu, a website dedicated to European Union policy. A warm welcome to each of you. Pieter, if I could start with you first of all. This recommendation, of course, still has to be signed off by other member states. Any doubt that it will get through?
Actually, I think there's a good chance now that it will get through. Denmark, which was, let's say, one of the greatest opponents to Ukrainian accession, has signaled that it would support Ukrainian candidate status. And also the Netherlands has done so, which is also, let's say, in the more skeptic camp. Of course, as has been pointed out, you know, this is only the very first step. Another step is whether to open actual accession negotiations, and then actual accession is a very long way off. There's many conditions to be attached to that, and this is also something that EU leaders will discuss this week.
All right, Elena, do you think we would even be discussing this candidacy right now if it was not for the Russian invasion?
I don't think so. As you can see in the case of the Western Balkans, the accession negotiations with many countries have been effectively stalled there for years for reasons that are connected with the reforms dynamics in the countries themselves, but also with the fact that the EU is increasingly lukewarm about the enlargement policy. But definitely the war has changed the geopolitical perspectives of the European Union. And a lot of countries, even the ones that have been skeptical for many years, are now under pressure to be more certain about what EU wants to do and about what EU can do in its own neighborhood.
Okay, and Alexander, from the Ukrainian point of view, how important is it that this recommendation comes at this time when Ukraine is at war with Russia?
Well, for Ukraine, it's huge. It's very important. I just remind you that in the year 2014, hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians took to the streets when then-President Yanukovych made the decision he wouldn't sign the association with European Union. And ever since, it just we have been showing how critical, how important it is for us, and what kind of sacrifice we are ready to take upon us to walk the path towards Europe. It's huge.
Yeah. So you're saying that the people of Ukraine, the vast majority of them, anyway, wanted membership of the European Union before this war happened.
Of course, it was. There have been doubts about NATO membership before the annexation of Crimea, before 2014, but there were never doubts about in the population about EU membership as a strategic goal for Ukraine. Ukraine always had these two paths in front of her. Russia and Poland. And Poland has become a success in the last two or three decades. Russia hasn't. And it's just as simple as that. We just want to be successful and we don't want to be a country like Russia.
Your president, Alexander, he says that this recommendation, and again, it is only a recommendation, actual membership could take, several years. It could take decades. He says it will bring victory closer. Will it? And how?
This whole war is about spirit. It's about determination. And it's not only our determination. It's also about, the spirit of the outside world of Europe that seems to be awakened now. After years of this so-called, policy of pragmatism, which was hiding very often other cowardness or greed or foolishness. Now, finally, not only Ukraine is changing, Europe is changing. Europe is seeing what it means to really take values seriously. Europe sees that these are values worth fighting for, and they are not for sale, like unfortunately they often were in European Union in the last couple of decades, especially in the last decade.
Sure, so, I understand that. I understand that. It's just coming back to that simple point that where President Zelensky says that this recommendation will bring victory closer. I'm just wondering, logistically, physically, how can that happen?
Why it will make our spirit stronger. It will make our spirit stronger. It mm-hmm. will give us the sense of direction and the sense of being recognized.
Understood. So, Pieter, if I can come to you, what's your view about this? What difference to the current battle does this recommendation make, do you think? Is it about the symbolism of the EU is good for Ukraine?
Well, there's two aspects of it. First of all, indeed, it's sort of a moral expression of support for Ukraine. We all know that on the short term, this means very little. Even in terms of money, the European Union is sending lots of money to Ukraine anyway. So it's mostly a strong political signal, but signals are important to Ukraine. But secondly, it's also a signal to Russia that we will be the ones deciding whether we want to, welcome countries into our club of democracies, whatever you may think of that. So you could say that there's a little bit of a risk involved in that. But then Russia has been making clear that it's mostly concerned about NATO membership for Ukraine, which I think will not be forthcoming, at least for now. Things may change even on that front. But Russia has signaled that it would be less worried about EU membership. I think it's all in all, it's a good decision. The main downside is that, if the war stops and if Ukraine then, tries to improve and is being rebuilt, it may prove very hard for Ukraine to comply with the conditions. So I think the European countries need to be very clear not to give false hopes to Ukraine. I think they already know it's important to say, look, we definitely want you in our club, but this is going to take a long time, given how much, work you still need to do.
Alexander, I can see you're shaking your head there. What's your view about this point that Pieter makes about giving false hope?
Well, we have been hearing this, let's not give Ukraine false hopes for years. And I was hoping that finally it stops now, because if Ukraine is not worthy of being in the European family that it's defending so courageously right now from this ferocious and insane dictator in the East, then who is? And if Europe is hinting at Ukraine's corruption, then probably Europe should look at itself, because Ukraine was telling Europe for many, many years who Putin is. What did Europe do? They just brushed it off and continued doing not always very transparent deals with Putin. So in a way, Europe owes Ukraine, because Ukraine was warning the world and Europe for many, many years. Instead of that, Europe was giving Putin every possible finance and every possible way to get ready for the war. We were saying he is getting ready for the war, and Europe made this war partly possible. So let's not overlook that.
Indeed. Elena, when President Putin says that Ukraine is in danger of becoming a semi-colony, what do you think he means by that?
He repeatedly thinks that, and he says it repeatedly, that Ukraine is not a sovereign country because supposedly it's controlled from Washington or from the European Union and so on. But he's been saying that about countries in Europe all along. He doesn't think that even Europe is an independent continent, and no country in Europe is supposedly independent, according to him, because they're allied with the United States. But what is interesting in Ukrainian case is that, of course, he's trying to use this rhetoric to justify his invasion and deny the legitimacy of Ukraine. But this is exactly why European Union is making the move right now in trying to make sure that Ukraine actually is a sovereign country. Ukraine has a choice, and its citizens are allowed to make a choice whether they choose the European path or whether they choose the path of going with Russia. Putin doesn't like the choice that Ukrainians are making, so of course he's tried to delegitimize the choices of Ukrainians.
Is there a danger that this EU recommendation, Elena, will make Putin more entrenched?
Putin is trying to say that everything that the West does is a danger for Ukraine's prospects. Supplying weapons for Ukraine is a danger. Providing any help to Ukraine is a danger. But actually, that means that the EU should not be able to provide any help to Ukraine, which is definitely nothing fair is about it. And this is definitely not helping to restore the rule of law in the neighborhood. So the one language that Putin does understand, though, is the clear messages and the messages of power. He also said before that if he insists on military neutrality of Ukraine, the Russians were saying that, okay, European membership is something that they would accept. So this is also the way for European Union to call Russian bluff once again and make sure that Ukraine has the candidacy offer at least on the table before any even potential discussions or negotiations with Russia can start.
Right. And Pieter, at the moment, of course, we don't even know what shape, what the geography of Ukraine will look like by the time the membership is finally granted, as and when and if and when it is. And that in itself, that kind of territorial unknown is going to slow the process up, isn't it?
That's indeed a major concern. Now, I think is more important is what we were discussing earlier, because any serious talk of Ukrainian membership is gonna happen when the war is over, hopefully soon, of course, and then indeed we will know the actual territorial shape of Ukraine. I do understand the Ukrainian concerns about false hope, and that this is often used as an excuse for European countries that are afraid of such a big country entering the EU, given all the power it would have, the fact that it would shift the balance of power to the east. Actually, recently, French President Macron has been coming up with an interesting initiative to think a bit more profoundly of some kind of a, not an alternative to EU membership, but a bigger association that is much more lighter, that could serve as a waiting chamber for countries that want to enter the European Union but that are not yet ready, or for countries like the United Kingdom that are not happy with the sort of the great powers that the European Union has. And perhaps we already have an organization like that. It's called the European Free Trade Association, EFTA. I think that's something especially Ukraine should seriously consider to reform EFTA to make it a waiting chamber for the Western Balkan Six and for Ukraine, and to have the United Kingdom in it. I think that would definitely reassure.
All right. There's an idea. Let's put that to Alexander in Kyiv. Alexander, what's your thought about that concept of a kind of waiting chamber?
It doesn't sound good. Waiting chamber. You should think about a better name, first of all. And second of all, this is what we heard in the last couple of weeks from the countries who were hesitant about opening doors for Ukraine, finding out all kinds of, alternatives. And that's another alternative for instead of, embracing Ukraine and seeing Ukraine for it is, a family, for what it really is, a member of the family, a worthy member of the family. All of a sudden, Europe would want some chamber. I don't think chamber is what Ukrainians are bleeding now and dying for. Quite frankly, about the point that was made before about escalation, about Putin's mood and Putin's ideas. I think we are well past that point, and we should have realized long ago what was clear for Ukraine long time ago, that Putin was getting ready for this war for years, if not decades, and this is the last imperial war. It just brings the colony back. It's not about Europe. It's not about NATO. It's just about bringing back. He has this insane idea about the great Russian nation that consists of great Russians, small Russians, i.e. Ukrainians, and white Russians, i.e. Belarus. And he wants to create this new Soviet Union. This is what this war is about. And EU perspective is absolutely marginal in the head of this insane dictator.
Okay, Alexander, I just like to ask, how hard do you think it will be for Ukraine once this war is over to honour those reforms, those requirements of the EU for membership, the rule of law, reducing the power of the oligarchs, human rights and tackling corruption and so forth?
Oh, God, it will be a different world after the war. everybody's talking about that in Ukraine, that once the war is over, we shouldn't rebuild the country. We should build a new country, because all these sins of which we are absolutely aware of, they should be gone. We should deal with them. And first of all, corruption, of course. Second of all, we should be more tolerant. We should be more embracing Europe and embracing minorities in Ukraine. There are, indeed, the homework is there, and it's big, it's long. But believe me, the mood in the population is, first, we win this war. Second, we will get down to those reforms and building a new country with the help of Europe.
Elena, I don't know if you want to comment to that, but also I'd like to ask you the question, do you think there should be a fast-track accession for Ukraine in this process to leapfrog those others that we were talking about earlier?
The EU Commission has said already many times, and this is echoing the positions of the member states, that the accession process will be merit-based, that Ukraine will need to go through the reforms. If Ukraine manages to go very fast through them, of course, Ukraine can join in a few years, and that would be very desirable by everybody. But the reforms will need to be made. And we need to be also very honest here on the European side. The enlargement is not just about Ukraine or any other candidate country. It's also about the European Union. One of the concerns why people are a bit uncertain about whether they want new members or not at all is about whether European Union can absorb them, including whether the European Union can be efficient if we keep enlarging. Currently, European Union makes most of the decision by unanimity or consensus, and if we keep adding more and more members, it's very unclear whether the EU will not become something dysfunctional and unable to move forward. So part of this homework is also on the EU side to see what we can do. But also the discussion that we started about this special waiting chamber, there is no consensus about how it could look and what it would mean. There is consensus that the entire process takes very long. And there is consensus that there shouldn't be any exceptions in terms of waving countries through without them making the necessary reforms. But one of the ideas that's also circulating is how to make this accession in a way staged. For example, if Ukraine completes the reforms, let's say, on digital services, why don't let Ukraine be a full-fledged member of some digital market? Or if there is a completion of certain reforms in the area of the energy portfolio, let's fully integrate Ukraine in this domain. That would also help citizens to feel that there's something tangible that happens over all these years, even before Ukraine can become the full member.
Let me put that to Peter Klepper. What do you think about that, this kind of incremental approach?
I think it's a very interesting avenue to explore, and I think you could integrate with sort of my idea of using EFTA again as what it has always been meant for, to sort of associate with countries that are not a member of the EU. I do think Ukrainians should appreciate that the EU is a club that is very powerful. You know, that is deciding. A lot of the regulations, according to estimates, two-thirds of the impact of all regulations in the European Union. There's also massive financial transfers within the EU. So whether they like it or not, the truth is that many current member states are wary to allow newcomers into the club. So that's why I think we have to be more realistic and indeed sort of incremental, opening for Ukraine to the EU market, sort of methods like that.
Okay.
I'm going to
stop you right there because
we're just
running out of time, and I just want to throw it back to, forgive me, but I just want to throw it back to Alexander in about 30 seconds, sir. So the EU meets next week. What would be your message to them?
Well, my message would be very simple. We fight for you guys. Please see what we are doing and appreciate us and also admit that, in part, this war is your doing, too.
Thank you so much, all of you, for joining us. We could talk for many more minutes and hours, indeed, but thanks in the meantime to Alexander Scherber, Elena Kutsko, and Pieter Klepe. Thank you so much. And thank you too for watching. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, just go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Nick Clark, and the entire team here in Doha, it's goodbye for now.